This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
Well, welcome everybody. It's good to see you. I'm Chuck Treadwell. I'm the director of the parish. We want to welcome those of you who have joined us online as well. Ben, this is called an owl.
This here?
Yes.
This is an owl? Okay.
And it moves. When I'm talking, it's looking at me. When you're talking, it's looking at you.
How interesting.
Yeah. That's kind of crazy.
It's a little scary.
Yeah. So when Leroy talks through the whole thing, it'll just be looking
at him.
So this is how it works. And it, from my angle, I don't know if you can see it, but it really does have eyes and it's looking at me. So I'm a little self-conscious by this thing. Yes. Yeah. What? Never self-conscious? Is that what you said? Well, fair enough. Okay. So this is our first, actually, in a series called Holy Conversations. And this is Mona's brainchild. Mona, thank you very much for this great idea. Yes, give Mona applause. Yes. We can give Mona applause for a whole lots of things, mostly for trying to keep us intellectually, spiritually, morally engaged in our walk of faith. And so that's really her job. It should be on her job description, moral engagement. Right? She does a great job, and I'm very pleased with that. But this is a new series called Holy Conversations. As you all are well aware, our custom in Grail C is lectures from really brilliant, educated, interesting, nuanced, and occasionally clergy from the parish leaders to talk about various and sundry topics that are interesting to us, that are pertinent to the faith life. But there are certain things that we engage in our lives that are complicated and that don't really lend themselves to a lecture format so much. Here's an expert, we'll just listen to them talk. But they're really designed to be conversations. Today is a conversation mostly between Ben and me. I'll introduce Ben in just a second. And then we'll field some questions from y'all. But holy conversations may morph into some different things. There may be times when you're actually around a table together and discussing these matters yourselves. Because that's kind of the rubber in the road piece, right? Where does the faith life intersect the really complex pieces of our lives? And one that I can think of that is maybe the most complicated of all is our engagement in civic life as people of faith. What does that look like and how does that look? So as we move into this conversation, I want to throw out some ground rules. I mean, these are the ground rules for all of our engagements as human beings. Oh, Ben's got a fan base. Look at here, his kids, and they're all here. Come on in, come on. We got room for you.
There's three seats right down
three
front.
Seats on the front row. Yes. Hi, Wynn. Welcome home. Walked in the door and now she's on the front row. I love it. Okay. So the ground rules for holy conversations are like the ground rules for all of our engagement. We want to start with being curious. Come to the topic open-minded, curious, like you expect to learn something. We all have big fat opinions, every one of us. A couple of us with big fat opinions have a microphone. So. But we want to be open. We want to learn. We want to know that we don't know everything we need to know. And we expect to learn and grow. And we want to discuss issues and opinions and not the person with the opinion, right? That's really important. If we can stay on topic, that's good. Because it doesn't take long, especially if they're controversial issues, for me to move to where I am now in an argument with you personally. And now I'm beginning to doubt your integrity or the fact whether you're a Christian at all anymore, right? Because we have such different opinions. But we want to steer clear of that. We want to stay on the opinion.
That usually happens when we talk about Alabama football. He cannot, yeah.
No, I've judged you long ago.
Yeah.
And so has everyone else in this
room. Yeah, no, that's always, yeah.
But we're on the same page when it comes to Steelers football.
There you go.
Puts us in a minority in this
room.
That's
right. Yeah, yeah.
But we are Steelers fans. I think that's how we started being friends with Steelers fans. Okay. So to go back to something I've been saying for 7 years, it's a Dietrich Bonhoeffer idea. It's really, really important in these conversations that we keep Jesus between us. All joking aside, I need to see Ben through the eyes of Jesus, meaning as beloved and redeemed, and what Jesus was willing to sacrifice his life for. And he sees me the same way. And that way, it just changes the way we are going to be in conversation with one another. if we look at one another as beloved first and always, then we're just going to treat each other differently. So those are sort of the grounds. Okay, so first I want to introduce you to Ben Philpott. Welcome, Ben, please.
Very happy to have you.
Many of you know Ben. I've been in public with him enough times that he has stopped occasionally. He is a minor celebrity here in Austin. Right. And it makes him really happy, by the way.
That's true.
But he is the senior news editor at KUT, which is our public radio station. But you have not always been that. So I'd love for you to introduce yourself to us a little bit. Tell us kind of your journey that got you into journalism, and particularly got you in a place where you're the one I called to talk about the intersection of civic faith, politics, and the Christian faith.
Well, first of all, so I am in journalism, and ego is always a little bit of a part of journalism. So I will say I'm actually the managing editor at KUT.
Oh, sorry. Was
the senior editor a few years back. But anyway, I did.
He's 2 inches taller than I thought.
Maybe you're right. I came to KUT about 20 years ago when they first created the newsroom. You know, Austin was the largest, was the only capital city in the United States that did not have a functioning newsroom within its public radio station 20 years ago. So they finally, you know, decided, well, maybe it's time. And I came in to work there and just, you know, covered a little bit of everything, then kind of carved out a niche as a political reporter. Started my first legislative session was 2003. First campaign was the 2002 governor, lieutenant governor, all that race. You know, went from there, politics, legislative sessions, policy, followed Rick Perry through 2 presidential campaigns, spent a week in New Hampshire with Ted Cruz, and Iowa with Ted Cruz. And then finally moved into more management roles at the station. And so I've pulled back a little, but people do tend to keep coming up to me and saying, hey, tell me about what your opinion is on politics. So.
Right. Well, I think one of the things I really enjoy about what you do on KUT is during the election season, you're on and you are interviewed and you explain how the basics about how Texas and American politics work. I call it the schoolhouse rock of politics. And it helps me because this is not my thing. I am not a political womp in any meaningful way. I try to follow it only because my mother harasses me if I don't. Right. She thinks it's irresponsible for a priest not to know more than I know. Right.
But I think that's what we really try to do at KUT. I mean, there are plenty of, if you want to get into the nitty gritty of political science and pollsters and all of that stuff, you can go read the Texas Tribune or you can read New York Times. I mean, those are going to be real high level, like philosophies of how you run a campaign and what issues are making people do this and what issues are making people do that. And I think what we try to do at KUT is just make sure you know how to go to the polls, that you know where the polls are, that you know how to register to vote. And then we provide, you know, thumbnails, we provide information on all the candidates, but our goal is really to get you to the polls. What you do when you get in there is your business, but we want to make sure that everyone understands that if you're gonna have a functioning democracy, you have to participate in the democracy. And so we wanted to just make sure everybody, and we really started this about 4 years ago. We talked, almost every day about how you get registered, how you go to the polls. We got an email from a woman who said, I have not voted in 30 years. And after listening to y'all day in, day out, you know, I went to the polls for the first time. And it was just like, okay, that is justification for everything we did.
Thanks. Very good. Okay, so the root question that we're asking is about the intersection of the life of faith and the civic world that we're in. What is the role, the responsibility? How does a Christian engage that work? Is it a total separation? Is there some strange merger? And you've read enough history yourself to know that the church has been in various positions, in various places throughout history. There are places historically where there was no distinction, where the emperor and the crown were the crown and the religious leader were the same, certainly with the Church of England. But that's not the environment in which we live as Americans. We live in a place where we have established this notion of the separation of church and state. And there are a whole lot of opinions about what that actually means. Some say that means Christians stay out of politics, and some of you really don't like it when we preach politics, because, and you quote that notion that it's a separate church and state. And other churches are much more liberal about that. They're much more engaged. They're much more hands and feet on the ground, politicians coming into the building and that sort of thing. So could you give us, in your Schoolhouse Rock way, kind of give us what does it mean? What does separation of church and state mean in the American Constitution?
So first of all, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but, you know, it basically focuses on two major parts, which is that the government, that there shall not be a state sanctioned government and like the Church of England.
State-sanctioned church.
Yeah, state-sanctioned church. Yeah, sorry, right, state-sanctioned church. Thank you. There shall not be a state-sanctioned church, and that the government shall not pass laws to favor one religion over the other. And that's about it.
So say that again. Say those two things again.
So that there shall not be a state-sanctioned church, and the government shall not pass laws to favor one religion over the other. And of course, depending on who you are and what your belief system is, you know, people have run with that all over the place. But those are the two. And again, no, not a lawyer. So I'm not going to be able to get into really any nitty gritty about any of that.
Right.
But
no, that's what I needed. I needed just the thumbnail of what that means. I've noticed two things in your response is that those are both about how the government behaves.
Yes.
Both of those things. You know, not a state sanction and no favoring. It doesn't say anything at all about how the church behaves.
No, I mean, I guess the church stuff mostly comes from, or I don't know, mostly. When I think about the church stuff, I think about IRS rules.
Okay.
And, you know, if you're going to get nonprofit status, you are not advocating for a candidate. You are not endorsing candidates. You are not doing stuff like that, which you may have seen recently. We've had some articles out of the Texas Tribune about, you know, a handful of mega churches around the DFW area that have had candidates, you know, come and be blessed and, you know, go vote for this Joe Smith right here, go vote for him. And questions about whether or not that could put their nonprofit status in jeopardy.
Gotcha. So, all right, to clarify, so then the law is that churches cannot sanction a particular camp, right? Is that right?
That's my understanding, that it has been, yeah.
So then what about the church's engagement in the political process? And I want to separate in two things, because we're going to move to the individual Christian, but we're starting with because we're talking about the Constitution, the institutions, right? The government and the church. And y'all know there's not a church, right? I mean, there's lots of churches, but I'm thinking denominational bodies and congregational bodies when I say churches. Then we'll move to the individual, you know, engagement. So just your having seen it, having watched it, where is the line between it when a church is advocating for something, for a topic, something they care about, advocating for the poor, advocating for equal rights, whatever, fill in the blank, or on other sides of things, advocating for abortion rights, advocating, you know, against abortion rights. Where is the line when that advocacy around issues becomes what would cause you tax problems?
I think the best example, or maybe the strongest example of that I remember when I think about, you know, a point of view, maybe even a political point of view being mentioned from the pulpit here at St. David's, is years ago when the debate was raging about whether or not we should have the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. One of the priests here at St. David's got up in the pulpit and delivered a great sermon that did not say how people should vote, that did not say which side of the issue they were for or against Obamacare, but and the priest said it very eloquently, but the bottom line was, what I took away when I left was, if you think Jesus wouldn't want people to have health care, you're wrong. And again, they never got anywhere near, from what I can remember, and this again has been a decade ago or so, from what I can remember, they never said it anywhere near that specifically, but that was the bottom line. And So in my view, that is the right way to do it. Okay. My view, the right way. That is the right way to do it. You know, I followed, when I was following Governor Perry when he was running for president the first time, I spent the entire month of December on a bus tour with him in Iowa, leading up to the Iowa caucus, which was like January 3rd or something. And so I went to every Advent and Christmas service you could imagine, sometimes two churches a day on Sundays. And it was him up at the front, sitting beside the minister, getting to the pulpit and talking, you know, not delivering a sermon, but, you know, speaking to the congregation. In how I grew up, that made me uncomfortable. Now, I don't know if that uncomfortable and IRS are the same thing, but
because the IRS makes everybody.
None of the preachers, and this may have also played in a little more with Governor Perry's unpopularity at that time in Iowa. He finished like sixth or seventh or something like that. But none of the preachers said, you know, Pat, this is the guy you should vote for. It was like a Sunday school class. It just happened to be during the actual service. Rick Perry was able to come over and say his piece, and then that was that. But I didn't, just my own personal, I didn't like that.
Right. Well, you didn't like that you were in churches, is that?
I didn't like, yeah. I mean, it's not what he said. It's not who he was. I would not appreciate a politician coming and standing where you usually deliver the sermon and speaking to the congregation.
Well, and I would assume, I mean, I wasn't there, I didn't see any of that, but I would assume he wasn't talking about his vacation. He was probably talking about his platform, right? You know, like
he was through religion.
So what is essentially, I mean, the Constitution is are basically articulating, and I'm going to make a statement. You tell me if you agree or rebut it, that the government is essentially secular. It is not a religious thing in any way. And yet there's this engagement in the religious life. I mean, they use the church, I mean, clearly, as a gathering place of citizens. I mean, that's where we are. You know, a lot of people are on Sunday, so that's who has a building that will hold us all, you know. So, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, there's a long history of the church being the town hall as well, you know. And so it's an interesting intersection, isn't it, to have a secular process that then engages the sacred spaces but it wasn't a debate, was it? I mean, it wasn't a conversation about ideas. It was
a campaign speech. It was a campaign speech with, you know, with some mention of Christmas, probably.
Well, because I think I know him to be a man of faith. He is a Christian, so he felt comfortable saying that.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm assuming
some of the things he said were better than what the preachers were saying. But we were in some small Iowa towns.
Well, we all know most politicians are much better trained in oratory than most preachers.
Well, that's, yeah.
Right. So they know how to put that out there. So I hear you, and I agree with this, that we move, that the church has a role in this. The church is a gathering place for people. It is a place where we reflect on ideas. It's a place where we can debate vigorously, essentially secular things, what are considered secular things, because in the life of faith, there's no such thing as a secular thing, right? And I think what makes us nervous and afraid is that when a priest says, this is a sacred issue, I wonder if that doesn't make people think they're trying to take over the government. Right. You know, they're trying to move in and control things.
Well, I think that there's tension. You know, you have your political view. You have, you know, unfortunately, more and more, you have your political team that you support. You wear the jersey all the time and everything. And when you're reminded that your political team isn't on the same page as Jesus, it can upset you. and you want to shoot the messenger as opposed to think about the message that was just delivered to you.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I would assume that there were some people within the congregation that day when we heard that Jesus might want people to have healthcare, that didn't like that. And, you know, didn't come back, went somewhere else, who knows.
Right.
But I think that is, you know, we get so, and I mean, you know, to bring it back to the sports, I mean, I feel the same way. If I really think that the Steelers have a great running back and somebody comes up and says, you know, he really stinks. I'm like, hey, shut up. You
know? He's my nephew.
He's my, yeah, that's exactly. Right. Yeah. That's so, I mean, I think that's what we, you know, we, because as fewer and fewer people do go to church, more and more people do spend too much time on the internet. And so you're getting your belief structure from somewhere other than a minister or a community of faith. And so then when you're reminded about where you're, you know, the views that maybe started some of this conversation, it gets people upset.
So it's complicated. I appreciate you bringing that up because it's complicated. And we are one sentence away from a personal story. I mean, and because political issues are always personal. I don't know anybody gets rabidly defensive about something that doesn't affect their life in any way. You know, I mean, occasionally I like listening to ESPN talk radio because I don't mind listening to them shout at each other because it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it's just kind of, it's fun. It's a game. They're talking about a game, literally. It's much more difficult for me to listen to political talk radio or television when they're shouting at each other because they're talking about things I care about that are personal matters. I mean, you think about all the things that we're debating, healthcare, women's bodies, LGBTQ things. These are our family members. This is us. You know, it's my life. And so when I hear a politician spew something or articulate something I agree with, I'm on the team because it's my team. You know, yeah. This matters to me. And so I think it gets, and so when you said that the people maybe reacted to that sermon, reacted negatively to that sermon. And I thought for two reasons they would react negatively. First, they maybe disagreed with the statement.
Right.
Then maybe Jesus wouldn't have had an opinion about healthcare. You know, I mean, maybe that's not, you know, that you can't, maybe that's an overstatement. You know, they might take that exception. Or they take the exception that you're a priest, we're in church, you have no business talking about what's going on out there. And I've long time given up on that. Because out there and in here are not, I mean, yes, the government is secular, but what's happening out there and what's happening here, there's no distinction. It's people, it's us. You know, so the church has a voice, the church has a teaching. We have a whole doctrine around human, who the human is and how the human should be treated. And so we are invited both, and I start as an institution to actually have something to say about it in the world when people are not being treated with respect and dignity. The church I have moved from a place where I thought none of that to a place where I think we have an obligation actually.
Do you have a line?
Well,
maybe line's too bold and bright, but do you have a?
Well, sure. I mean, the obvious line is you'll never hear me endorse a candidate, right? Because when someone says that you're, you know, your team's not the best running back, you know, that your party is not consistent with the gospel, the answer is, of course, it's not. Neither is mine, right? You know, political parties are not the gospel. Political parties are groups of individuals who are trying to solve problems. And sometimes, and political parties shift. You know, I mean, what the platforms in my lifetime seem to have swapped in almost entirely. So these things move. And sometimes our politicians are right and sometimes they're wrong. Sometimes the policies are consistent with gospel. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes a government needs to do jobs that I can't justify as a Christian, but that's the nature of government, right? Is to protect boundaries and borders and to keep people safe. But I can't find that in the gospel anywhere because, well, they're different things. So, I mean, it gets super complicated. I'll tell you, my line has moved.
Yep.
And I told you this the other night at my house, and so I'll tell it to you, that I made a terrible mistake in my very first sermon at St. Paul's in Waco. I came out of Dallas where politics are rife. Church politics are just as vitriolic as secular politics. And so we danced the dance all the time. And one of the ways I danced the dance was pretty natural to me. Middle child, peacemaker, right? You know, I was raised by a professional conflict manager. I heard my dad raise his voice twice in my life, and I was in mortal danger both times. You're about to be bitten by a snake. Those two times. Those are the only times he's ever yelled at me. And he could certainly communicate his anger. Mostly just by looking at me with these piercing blue eyes, and I was done, right? But that's me. That's the way I'm wired. I am a peacemaker first. So it comes really naturally to me to be a centrist,
yep,
and to be neutral on a lot of things, try to find common ground. But what I realized is I had compromised away some of the things that I think are really important in the priesthood. And I felt like I had muted myself. And the big mistake I made is when I got to Waco, I said, I'll make some promises to you. Here's one. I'll be there when you're in the hospital, whatever. You know, it's basic priest things. And then I said, and I won't preach politics. If we need to talk about politics, we'll gather in the parish hall and we'll slug it out. But I won't preach it. And I got claps, you know, applause, because people didn't want to hear it in church. And it took about 6 weeks for me to realize I had hobbled myself. And I had to keep that promise. I made it. So I kept it for 12 years.
And I asked you this the other night. Yeah. Explain how it hobbled you.
It hobbled me because I felt like I was muted. And y'all know how we preach here. You know how I preach. You've heard me address political issues from the pulpit. But you haven't heard me rant about politics. That's still not my nature. Right? I'm still the same person I've always been. I don't have an opinion about every single thing you read on the front page of the paper. And I don't need the front page of the paper in every one of my sermons. But occasionally, when the government takes positions that I think are utterly contrary to the most fundamental parts of the Christian faith, I have to say, you know, wrote letters after the declarations the government made about LGBTQ kids and about trans kids, because I felt that was a hostile, violent act, and I felt compelled to act. I made no such promise when I came here, by the way. So I feel like I have the right, I would even say the obligation, to say things. And we, our covey of preachers, some are much more politically minded and tuned in than others. So you'll hear a lot more politics out of some of our preachers than you do from us. But I would still say we're well in the safe place for talking about separation of church and state.
Oh yeah.
We're breaching nothing. You know, so when Amy, who is a firebrand, we all know, right? When she says something that is overtly about a political opinion, she is still well within separation church and state and well within her moral Christian obligation to say those things.
This may be very simple and basic, but for me, it's all about, can the message still be tied back to Jesus?
Yes.
To see it through Jesus. Because if it can, and if it makes sense to me in that way, then I don't view it as political, and you know, and I don't take offense, and I don't think you're preaching politics. Right. I think you're preaching, you know, what does our bishop say? The Jesus movement, love.
The way of love.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's all. But so getting back to the line again real quickly. So, presidential candidate X comes through and asks to speak to the church. What would you say?
I'm so glad no one's ever asked me that question in real life. You know, I'd say, Santi, when he was here, he spent a lot of time at the Capitol, by the way. I don't know if you knew that, but it was laying the foundation for a new position that we're going to have on staff at the church starting in the spring. And it is, as Amy goes off to be ordained, and we are so happy about that, and she'll, not that she's leaving, but that she's going to be ordained, and the church will take her away from us. And that's, we're presenting her to the church for God's good use, right? We're going to have a new position based on the advice of our outreach committee and our racial justice committee. And the vestry, and my own opinion, obviously. I mean, all HR matters in the church are finally up to the rector, just to remind you of that. Speaking of ego, right? Yeah, right. It's going to be a position of community engagement and advocacy. Now, we've always had staff people involved in community engagement. That's the big word for outreach, right? Direct service outreach, increasing our numbers of places where we're doing hands-on work, like we do at Trinity Center and other places, where we're caring for the most vulnerable. And we will continue to do that. But we're going to move a tiny toe very, very carefully into the world of advocacy, which means we are going to have a voice about what's happening in the world at the Capitol, because that's where laws are being made. And the church has an obligation to articulate that. By the way, I didn't make this up. There's an entire office of the Episcopal Church that I can send you the URL if you would like to see it. Staff members, everybody who are at the White House, they are lobbying for the things the Episcopal Church stands for. And they are the broad general things. None of these are, I mean, none of this gets into policy weeds, right? I mean, the very specific things, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the most fundamental parts of how we treat other people, how we treat this earth that we're on. You know, I mean, these just most elementary parts of being a human, being a caring about the earth that we're in. So we're gonna do that. We're gonna move into that piece. Santi was there all the time. To get back to your question, I ran off. Sorry. I'm supposed to be interviewing you. Why am I talking?
You said I could ask questions.
Come in. I'm gonna come back to you in just a second. Santi, though, I want to tell you this, because Santi was at the Capitol a lot, and he actually was at a thing where he got a 2-minute audience with the governor. Right. And so it was right after the governor's statements about trans kids. And I'll confess to you, I was annoyed at the governor at this point. Right. You know, so Santi says, "Oh, I got to talk to the governor." I said, "Okay, great. You know, congratulations. You don't always get to meet the governor, right?" But he got to meet the governor. I invited him to come to church. So what did he say? He said he would look at his calendar.
Well, good. So we were, that's a no.
We were close. Santi got a call from his office saying the governor appreciates the invitation, but unfortunately he will be unable to go. So I didn't have to deal with that. What I'm confessing, though, is not my job as your rector. What I'm confessing is me as a person. I don't want to deal with that. That's going to cause so much conflict and controversy. And if it was a different governor, if it was a Democratic governor, it would cause conflict and controversy.
Yep.
I honestly just don't want to deal with that. I like a little more distance, but I guess it would depend on who it is. There are certain politicians who say things that are so vile and so contrary to the teaching of Jesus. I felt like it would be morally irresponsible for me to give them a platform in this building. You know, I couldn't do that. Right. But.
And I think, and everyone heard, he didn't say their political viewpoints. He said against the teachings of Jesus, which again, for me, is where I would like all this to stay.
Right.
Because we, of course, we have different opinions on politics, but I hope we have at least more similar opinions.
About what the teachings
of about,
Jesus. Yeah. But we were also the location for the last, the current mayor's race. Both candidates sat right here. And there was it was a debate. It wasn't really a debate. It was questions
forum,
and answers. Forum, yeah. A forum, that's a better word. And then the city council members they're running for city council for this district were here. And that, I think, is absolutely inappropriate.
Where you're a community center.
Yes, where you function as a community center.
Yeah.
Giving them the pulpit is an entirely different question.
Yeah.
That's why it's a separate piece of furniture. It has its own role. And I do think it's an important line. And then I want to come and ask you a personal question. I want this for me. I want this accountability for me as a preacher, and I want the same accountability for all of our preachers, which is what you're saying defensible in the teachings of Jesus? Now, Jesus didn't say anything about a whole lot of things, so we have to make leaps, right? You know, what would Jesus do is not an obvious answer sometimes,
right?
And so we have to be careful about that. But if what I'm saying is clearly just my opinion, I need to step out from behind that pulpit. You know, I need to at least physically come out of the pulpit and talk to you and say, and claim it. You know, Paul does this in his letters. He writes letters, and there are a couple of places where he just says, this is just me talking, as opposed to, this is, I think this is what God wants. So I want to move it, because I think this is really pertinent and maybe important to the folks who are sitting in this room. What about you personally? I mean, you made me answer a personal question, so I'm going to ask you one.
Yeah, yeah.
What? I mean, you're in a, it's not just an either or for you. You have three things. I mean, you are a man of faith, a deep man of faith. I know a good bit about your faith, and your commitment to Christ is inspiring to me. You're also a journalist, and so there are ethics and expectations about how journalists behave and how you present factual information. And you're also a citizen yourself. I mean, you've got to go to the polls. I'm not asking you what you do inside the polls, but you have to go. So you have to engage that on at least those three different levels. So what's that dance like for you, and how do you do it?
You know, kind of like you, my line has shifted as I've gotten older, maybe, or maybe more self-assured, or however you want to say it. You know, so I'm a journalist. We have this veneer of unbiased work. I will say that I do truly believe that the journalists that I manage at KUT are very interested in the facts and are very interested in laying out those facts to our listeners and the people that read us online and letting you make the decision. We will point out when something is said that is contradictory, but it is to previous statements or actual facts. But we're not an opinion news organization. And we are NPR, which a lot of people assume is communist. Right. And so that, you know, that also, like, we're like, I'm like, you know, if it's like you're,
well, I invited you because I don't know anybody that works at Fox News. I didn't know.
You know, if you're, you know, which just means that we have to have an extra layer of don't do anything. People already have an opinion of us. Don't do something to reinforce the opinion.
Yeah, sure.
Unless the opinion is that we're unbiased, then do all you can to reinforce that opinion. Right. You know, so, I mean, my house has never had maybe one time we had a political sign in our front yard.
It was Kate's fault.
It was Joy's fault. And so this is the thing. Like, we don't have, neither of our cars have ever had a political bumper sticker on it. One election in 20 years being in Texas, one election, we had a sign up in our yard. Joy asked to put it in the yard. And not many people ask, but my standard line on that is, my wife wanted the sign. You want to go talk to her? Like, you know, it's ridiculous. How in the hell could I tell somebody, especially my wife, oh no, you can't have that sign in our yard, our yard. Right. Anyway, so, but we don't do that. You know, we don't give money to political candidates. So those are a couple of lines. Although the last few elections, Joy's gotten closer and closer to, I don't know, I think I got to, you know, and that's fine. But over the last few years, it has definitely been more of a, I have used Jesus as my shield in deciding to step out on some of these things. Like, you know, as the church got more involved with LGBTQ rights, I'm like, yeah, I'll go and do, I'll give money to, I will sign petitions, I'll do whatever you want on this issue, because I don't think the other side is defensible through my faith. So I'm ready for that debate. I'm ready for anyone who thinks that I'm being biased on that opinion to come up and have a conversation with me, because I'm ready for that. And also, that is a position. I'm talking about people who I think we should be taking care of, as opposed to, I think there's a tax cut here, or I think there's a, you know, a political party here, you know, all that. It's like, it is separate from that. It is this. Now, it has been made political, but I'm not viewing it that way. Sure. So, you know, but I still, when I get on the air, and even in conversation, you know, Chuck's seen me multiple times out at different dinner parties and stuff, and people come up and say, blah, 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 what about this at the Capitol? And my answer is almost always down the middle and fact-based. And because, again, that is the switch that I flip when I go on the air. I am here to give you information and let you make your own decision. Now, as many journalists, retired journalists have done, I'm looking forward to retirement and telling Twitter exactly where it can go and getting off Twitter and maybe having a couple of opinions here or there. But I'm also, I don't know. It's just not me to be a firebrand.
Right. So now address the intersection of your own personal faith and how you engage the essentially secular government. I mean, I'm not even sure how to ask. I couldn't articulate this question well enough to even write it down, but it's that, how does your faith inform what you actually believe is right and good?
Sure.
Is there something, I mean, yes, the teachings of Jesus, but yeah, just reflect on.
I think for me, especially over the last 6 years, it has been kindness. And is this bill that you're pushing about kindness or about not kind at all? And what is the, because, you know, in a politics and our politicians and our government are supposed to try to make our lives better and protect us and help us. And so if it's a bill that just simply appears to be about putting someone or something or some group in a corner, that is where I'm questioning more as a journalist. You know, what is the reason for this? What are you trying to fix with this? Well, I'm trying to fix blah, 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 blah. Well, that doesn't actually appear to be a problem. What are you trying to do with this bill? Are you just trying to get reelected?
Right, right.
Are you just trying to gain support for the base that you believe will vote for you? Like
cashing in on fear and anger.
Like what is the, you know, government, no matter what the thing is, if government is creating a solution in search of a problem and all parties do it, then it is just bad. It's bad government. That is an inefficient government if you have created something hoping that it's going to stop a problem that doesn't exist.
I think you just brought up a really important point, too, is that a lot of times we engage things just in a problem-solving matter. They're not really a matter of faith. It's, right. I mean, as long as those basic, the tenets are now the question is just what works, what's most efficient, what's most effective. And then I think that that's just a nice fist fight that we have to sort out. It doesn't create the same, for me, it doesn't create the same kind of angst or energy or potential anger or motivation. It's just, that's problem solving.
Yeah. I could spend all day hearing from a bunch of candidates on what their solutions for transportation are.
Right.
I don't have a second in my life to spend with someone talking about a bathroom bill.
Right.
I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's a really helpful distinction. Thank you. That's good. All right. We're at the time in this conversation where we do want it to be a conversation with you as well. We're down one microphone because we had our beautiful mariachi band at 9 o'clock, which was great fun. But we're down a microphone. So Mona is going to help with online. First of all, do you really want to start? And if you ask a question, I will repeat your question, or Ben will, hears you the best. and then one of us, Ben, hopefully is the person you're addressing them to. So let's start with Mona. Do you have anything from our online viewers? Nothing? Okay. All right. Then let's go here first. Yes.
So yeah, for people at home, it was how do you...
First she said we were awesome.
That's, yes, forgot about that.
Thank you.
But you know, for me, it's, you know, if I'm having that interview with a person who has views that I believe are maybe repellent, how do I still love them? How do I still think about it in that way? And I think, you know, sometimes the easiest way is not through the lens of Jesus, but through the lens of a couple glasses of bourbon.
Yeah, but for some of us, that means somebody would be bleeding by the end.
Well, that's the person wouldn't be in the room with me. I'd be back at home thinking about
the bourbon with
me. Yeah,
okay,
well,
good.
You know, it's tough, and honestly, that's been one of the biggest things for me over the last little bit, especially the last 6 years, as you know, our politics have become more polarized. Is, you know, how do I not hate? How do I not have that fleeting moment of, I don't know, a car wreck? You know, like, how do you not do that? Because there are some politicians that I've disagreed with over the years, but I truly have felt like they are coming to what they're pushing policy-wise from a you know, whether it's faith or just being very contemplative about, you know, like they're thinking and they're like, I have thought about this and this is what I think we should do. And those are much easier to just say, we have a disagreement, but you are not coming at this from a cynical, you know, hateful view. There are some politicians that aren't like that anymore. They are just simply coming to it from a cynical, hateful view. And I have not figured out what my response to that is yet, other than wishing for them to be in a car wreck probably isn't the right one. I know that, but I haven't, I'm still having trouble getting to the next step.
Yeah. I think Ben responded. I think it's not dissimilar to the parish priesthood. I mean, first of all, I love you. I difficult parishioners is just not really, that's not a long list of people. It's just so, you know. At least it might be by the end of today, but you know, it's just not. But I mean, a priest, and I mean, what I would say is that we're also human beings, right? I mean, so you know, like every other person, there are people that you really easily love, and there are others that you kind of love through gritted teeth, you know, and you have to say, yes, I love you too. And that's where the Bonhoeffer Jesus between us thing, I just can never stop seeing you the way Jesus sees you. But sometimes that also means that you also need to confront bad behavior. And that's a liberty that I have that I'm not sure you have when you're interviewing people. I can actually confront you and say, what you're saying is destructive and mean and not helpful. And it's contrary to what we're trying to do here. And I need you to stop. Now, it rarely, rarely happens, but I have had that conversation. And you know, and we have to do that from time to time. Every once in a while, we have to do it on Sunday morning in the lobby. You know, somebody comes in off meds, you know, things are going, the wheels are coming off and they are having a really bad day. And sometimes we have to manage that, encourage them to the right kind of care. And then occasionally we have to say, you can't be here today because you're in a bad place, you know, but that's rare. I mean, that's a rare thing. Mona, you got something else from online?
Oh. When both sides on topic X are clearly not valid.
So how does KUT manage a both sides debate if both sides are not valid or true? I mean, I think that's interesting. You know, we manage it by we allow people to have their say, especially if it's, you know, a candidate running for office. They are you know, they can have their piece within a story. They can have their piece within a story. They can have their say within a story. But then we usually go after experts people that, you know, whose job it is to actually study and kind of know the facts about whatever the situation is. And we have that playing within the story. So no matter if one person is wrong or two people are wrong or seven people are wrong on an issue, we pull it back to some kind of authority that can say, you know, within the bounds of nature, what is right and wrong on a specific topic.
But can you say, I mean, just to make up a totally silly one, if you had two people debating, what's the best thing to do if you're attacked by a dragon? Can you not say, there is no such thing as a dragon?
Yes. And, you know, we have this conversation every time because, you know, you go out and you interview candidates during an election season and they will say something that is not true. And we have this conversation about do you confront them right then and there or do you confront them in the story or not confront them, set the record straight in the story? And, you know, I think it kind of depends on the interview. Sometimes it is better to right then and there say, but violent crime is actually down 20%, which I know it isn't at the moment, but you know, I'm just making up a stat, you know, or, but this actually hasn't been what you're saying. You know, like, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with doing that. Also within the story, like nobody ever says something. I shouldn't say nobody. Our goal is to never let somebody say something that isn't true without having a line afterwards setting it straight, whether it is a direct rebuke of what the person said or a little nicer finessing of, you know, actually over the last 10 years, this is what's happened, you know, but we, the goal is never to just let a false statement stand.
Let's go over here.
For a civic lens that you formed all of that way of being because of your work as a journalist, or do you make it more explicit with people that were close to you? I know, of course, in your writing, you wouldn't say that you're Christian because that's said you might be separate, but I'm just very curious.
No, I get that. So the question was essentially, do my coworkers know that I'm Christian, or do they just kind of see it in how I comport myself, you know? I mean, I think, first of all, they do know. I mean, I'm not shy about saying, I'm not evangelizing to the newsroom, but I'm also, you know, I was like, oh, hey, I'm going to be at church this weekend. Can someone else pick up and edit? Or, you know, oh, my kids are, you know, we're going to choir practice tonight. I mean, like they have heard me talk about my life in the church, just like they would hear me say, oh yeah, and I'm going to go to a football game this weekend. Like it just comes out naturally. And then there have been a few times when it has been something a little more specific. You know, we had an issue with a colleague in the newsroom who had said something that had offended some other people. And this person had then, you know, sat down, had some different meetings and said, and had apologized. And I had several people in the newsroom that were like, well, they should just be fired. And I said, you know, I have to tell you that, like, you know, through my faith, I believe that forgiveness is a very important thing. This person certainly appears to be remorseful. This person certainly, you know, it sounded like a legitimate, thoughtful apology. My faith informs me that a second chance is given and that we move forward. And so, you know, I understand you just think that nothing will be fixed unless this person is fired, but we're going to see what happens next. Oh, you had, you know, over here, yeah.
Art. Chuck, my
work
politics previously. going to the Capitol to engage yourself, wonderful. Perspective is wonderful, but if you aren't in the weeds and things at all, I don't know how you're going to, I understand you might put a toe in, but How is that going to be?
Okay, great. So Art is asking, we're talking about putting our toe into the advocacy world. How do we do that? Maybe affirm sort of the general motivation for that. But then what about, how do you not get used by the machine, right, to their advantage? You know, if Director of St. David's, if we have any prestige in the city, shows up and starts talking, they might use that, or somebody from the church is that, well, St. David's thinks, right? Yeah. And he was quoting the AMA, because I don't know if you all know, but he is a physician, so he can do that. And how they, you know, he can be used in a way that's, you know, it's a risk. I think it's a risk we run, certainly, no question about it. I hope we will not be doing so naively. I don't think kindness and naivete are the same thing. And so I think we can engage kindly, and as Jesus said, you know, as gentle as lambs and as wise as serpents, pay attention. If we do get manipulated, well, we live in a sinful and broken world. And I think then we're weighing risks, right? What is the risk of us staying silent on a matter to avoid being misquoted, right? And yeah. And we're going to get this wrong. I want to say it out loud. We're going to get this wrong. And what we end up doing, we're going to stub our toe. We're going to trip a little. We might even do something you disagree with, you know, take a position. And we most certainly will be misquoted. Right? Not by Ben.
Not by KUT.
Or by a legitimate.
No.
But not by a legitimate journalist, right, of any sort. But
right.
But by someone who wants to use us or rebut us. I mean, every time the Episcopal Church has general convention, we get put on certain news sources as we support the murdering of babies. You know, like, no, no one voted to murder babies. You know, that's, you know, it's, and we get the most ridiculous. We get lampooned and our position gets made into a cartoon. I want to be aware of our time. I can help us field a half a question more, and then I've got to slip out. And we do need to wrap up because we have an 11:15 service that I need to go to. Let's go to Robin for our last question.
I will only push back a little and say that I think politicians of all stripes have tried to usurp Christianity and faith. But I think that, and again, just my opinion, I think for many people that attend St. David's, it feels more of a perversion coming from one party other than the other. I mean, I think one way you work towards fixing that is you, there are not a lot of Christian journalists at the Texas legislature. And I don't mean they're, you know, some of them are of other faiths. What I mean is there are not people of faith, no matter what religion, a lot of them covering journalism at the Texas legislature. So you can't leave it up to them. Having the Episcopal Church dip their toes in is not a bad idea. Groups like, what's the one from the Methodist Church? Doggone. I know the woman who has run it for years. Anyway, they have had an advocacy group that has done a lot of legislative work over the years, a lot of it on the budget, a lot of it on healthcare, a lot of it on, you know, LGBTQ stuff. But so it's, you know, I think it is good to be able to turn to people like that and let them speak about where faith plays a role, because you're not going to have a lot of journalists that are going to understand how to interpret this stuff. One of the funniest things about being a Christian covering politics is that I very often am maybe the only person of faith in a room, definitely maybe the only Christian in a room of journalists covering big religious things. And I'm kind of turned to as, because they do know that I go to church. And so they turn to me as like the religion whisperer. You know, we had that when we were on the road in Iowa, we were at a mega church and there were smoke machines billowing stuff. And they were like, Ben, why are they using smoke? And I'm like, well, because it makes the stage lights look better. But you know, we were at the, you know, Governor Perry had that big thing down at Reliant Stadium in Houston before he launched his first presidential campaign, the all day prayerathon or whatever it was called. And we were, I was walking with a few journalists past a group of people that were all laying face down on the ground. And we walked past and they're like, Ben, what's going on there? And I was like, they're fine.
They're not sick. So two quick things. You know, I think it is important to say that often that we both religious people and secular people try to use the other for their own devices, right? Right. I do too. I want my government to reflect my values, but it works both ways, right? And so the church gets co-opted all the time. But I will just my spiritual warning to you that anytime you marry the crown, the cross, and the flag, people die. That's just because it has now become a tool of power. And when we're grasping for power, people die. And I think that's where a line is for me. So there is engagement between cross and crown, but they can never be married because we have very different agendas and we have different jobs. So you want to know more about where the Episcopal Church is on this, literally where we are, what we're talking about, who we're going to see, just go to the episcopalchurch.org, that's the website, and just look for, search for Government Relations, Office of Government Relations. There's a whole group. So you can learn more about our engagement. Our diocese also is doing some of this work. And so we are on good ground to learn about it. And then we'll see where this goes. I got to go do a liturgy. Ben, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.